It's 7:30 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Folklorist Gerald Milnes thinks that Omi Wise of folk song fame was from West Virginia.
I got into courthouse research and found out about a woman who named Ruhami, which could easily be shortened to Ami or Omi, and there's about 10 or 12 different similar names used for Naomi. She did exist. She died of unknown causes, according to courthouse records.
It's been believed that the famous ballad was set in South Carolina. The story coming up on this West Virginia morning. With new regulations expected to come from the Environmental Protection Agency on coal-fired power plants this week, one West Virginia University law professor is predicting new challenges for the state's coal industry. As Beneduccio reports, the professor expects the coal industry to take legal action.
James Van Nostrand is a law professor at the WVU Law School who specializes in energy law. He fully expects legal challenges to be presented by the coal industry in response to upcoming EPA guidelines, which are slated to be released this week. He says he's expecting the new rules to emphasize carbon capture and storage technologies.
It's going to have a disproportionate impact on West Virginia, there's no question, and on our coal industry. And I think it's unfortunate. I understand the concept of technology forcing. I mean, there are other examples of that in federal statutes, the principle of adopting standards that can only be met if technology is developed to achieve them. We know that CCS, carbon capture and sequestration technology, is not commercially available to capture the quantities that are going to be necessary in order to handle a full-sized coal plant.
Van Nostrand also believes in the short term, the new regulations will deal a difficult blow to the coal industry and coal jobs.
It's certainly going to be very, very expensive, and as a practical matter, it's going to really hit the coal industry very hard. I think federal legislation, needs to be crafted in a way that doesn't harm a particular industry or particular region.
But the professor believes there's a silver lining for the state and for the industry. He says this involves using the state's forest resources to bring forward new solutions.
We have tremendous biomass potential in this state just through sustainably harvesting the forest residues. We're the third most forested state in terms of percentage of our land that's covered with trees, and just sustainably harvesting the forest residues and then processing those residues to co-fire with coal, that I hope is the solution that I hope our delegation is pursuing with EPA, because to the extent you can blend in biomass, you are reducing the carbon footprint of that coal plant, and that may be a way of achieving those targets. Take 90% out of the coal pile, you take 10% out of the biomass pile, and you've decreased the environmental footprint of that coal plant by 10%. That could be a way forward.
The EPA's new rules on coal-fired power plants are expected to be released tomorrow. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Beneduccio in Morgantown.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:33. Variable cloudiness today with a chance of light rain. Temperatures in the 70s. Partly cloudy overnight with lows in the mid-50s to the mid-60s. Partly cloudy and warmer tomorrow with a chance of light rain. Temperatures in the mid-70s to the mid-80s tomorrow. A chance of rain Friday night. And cloudy skies on Saturday with a 50-50 chance of rain and thunderstorms. Temperatures in the upper 60s to the mid-70s on Saturday.
Support provided by National Travel, partnering with American Express Villa Vacations. Details about reserving private villas in Europe, Hawaii, and the Caribbean at nationaltravel.com. Support for NPR comes from Charles Schwab, working to help investors take control of their financial future. Charles Schwab, own your tomorrow. Learn more at schwab.com.
Two music festivals are happening in the state over the next two weekends that feature some of the state's finest local talent. But there's something about Saturday's West Virginia Independent Music Festival and next weekend's Huntington Music and Arts Festival that separates them from similar events. The organizers of both festivals are serious local musicians themselves, looking not only to promote their own gigs, but expose the state and region to other fine acts from the area. Dave Mistich has more about these two events and the musicians behind them.
Logan County native Daniel Johnson plays drums with metal band Let the Guilty Hang and the acoustic-driven rock group Tim Browning and the Widowmakers. But outside of playing in his own bands, Johnson has been a fan and champion of the West Virginia music scene since his teenage years.
At 16 years old, I was lucky enough to have parents who allowed me to leave and go to shows and go travel. My mom gave me her Camaro. I would go to Charleston and see bands on Friday night instead of going to the local football game. I would go to the Common Grounds, and I became quickly invested in the Western music scene.
Bass player and vocalist Ian Thornton plays for the Huntington power pop group AC30. He too was noticing similar levels of talent as he was booking bands in a Huntington bar.
These bands were blowing my mind. I mean, you know, that's a funny expression, but the level of talent around West Virginia was just, I just couldn't believe it.
Although AC30 was just forming and putting in countless hours perfecting their own craft, Thornton became interested in pushing other local groups to new heights.
The main problem that distanced the music scene from being able to reach more people was the fact that it's all in bars. The only place you could get it was a bar. So my idea was give something to the community, bring this level of talent to the daytime.
Johnson says he's also interested in the communal aspect of local music, but for reasons with much higher stakes. Being from southern West Virginia, he says there's a need for something positive to happen in his area to fight against deeply rooted cultural and economic issues.
The times we live in now are plagued with drug epidemic, and there's such a huge Appalachian apathy brooding in southern West Virginia. There's a lot of negativity, and there's not a whole lot of change and people making positive changes. So generation after generation of, you know, just the economy's poor, you know, it's not. So for me, it was a investment into my local community.
And so, after helping organize other similar festivals in the Logan area, Johnson dove in headfirst by putting together the West Virginia Independent Music Festival. Now in its second year, Johnson has assembled a bill that has something for everyone. From the rockabilly of Ripley's The Fabulous Brothers Steel, to Columbus, Ohio-based Lo Pan, which features Parkersburg native Jeff Martin on vocals. For Thornton's own showcase, dubbed the Huntington Music and Arts Festival, he's lined up what he sees as top talent from West Virginia and beyond, including Morgantown's The Phantom Six. She had some memories and she had some dreams and a lot of little cracks to fall in. In recent Nashville transplants from Huntington, Coyotes in Boxes. All the scrawlings of a saint are a sinner's dirge, where the mass and chiefs converge on a plane where the cardinal cruise. A spectral light in Sicily restricting my movement to confuse. There's also Kentucky-born Tyler Childers, who's also made a name for himself on this side of the Ohio River. It isn't hard to believe he likes it here, too, with a song about serendipitous romance in the state's capital city. Charleston girl in a darkened room, and you don't know her like I do. We took the fire escape.
straight to her room and got stone raging blind.
Johnson will take the stage with Let the Guilty Hang and Tim Browning and the Widowmakers at the West Virginia Independent Music Festival on Saturday, September 20th. As for Thornton, he'll join AC30 at the Huntington Music and Arts Festival a week later on Saturday, September 28th. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Dave Mistich.
Traditional murder ballads are often sung to cast blame against villains and those who commit unjust violence against others. But perhaps one of the most awful crimes ever committed in a murder ballad is the drowning of poor Omi Wise. Noted newspaper publisher Jim Comstock included a version of the song in his West Virginia song bag, claiming that Omi, or Naomi Wise, was a bona fide West Virginian. Naomi Wise has been sung by many West Virginia ballad singers, including Maggie Hammonds. In a twist to the commonly held belief that the true Omi Wise of ballad fame was from North Carolina, folklorist Gerald Milnes set out to see if there was any truth to rumors that Naomi was actually from Randolph County, West Virginia. Originally produced for Tall Shadows Passing By, a live storytelling performance supported by Traveling 219, Jesse Wright Mendoza set out to explore the legend surrounding West Virginia's Omi Wise.
Oh, listen to my story, I'll tell you no lies. How John Lewis did murder poor little Omi Wise. He told her to meet him down at Adams Springs. He promised her money and other fine things.
That's the beginning of one of the most famous murder ballads in American music. It tells the true story of the murder of Naomi Wise by John Lewis in 1808 in Randolph County, North Carolina.
So fool-like she met him down at Adams Springs. No money he brought her, nor other fine things. Come with me, little Omi, and away we will go. We'll go and get married, and no one will know. She climbed up behind him, and away they did go. But off to the river where deep waters flow.
As the story goes, John Lewis seduced a young and innocent Naomi Wise. When she came to him and told him she was pregnant, he promised her marriage. But instead of becoming his bride, he took her down to the river and drowned her. Jerry Milnes is a folklorist in West Virginia. Years ago, he was approached by a man named Leroy Wingfield, who asked if he knew the song.
And I said, yeah, I'd heard different people sing that. And he said, well, I know where her grave is, on Cheat River.
As in the Cheat River in West Virginia.
That took me by surprise because I had heard of the true history of the original Naomi Wise that took place back in 1808 in North Carolina on the Deep River.
Leroy Wingfield introduced Jerry to Charles and Odie Chapman. All three said not only was Naomi Wise killed in West Virginia, but they also knew the location of her grave.
We're with Lee Wingfield.
Leroy Wingfield.
Leroy Wingfield. Yeah. And Charles and Odie Chapman.
Maybe we can start out, Mr. Wingfield, by just you telling us how you remembered the whole story, who you heard it from, and those kinds of things.
Okay. Back in the Depression days, they'd cut the timber behind on that hillside behind the grave. So one evening, the last trip down, I'd noticed some roses over on the left. And I thought, that's peculiar, roses there in the woods. And I laid my tools down and walked over and found out that it looked like maybe a grave there.
During this interview conducted in 1992, Leroy recalls asking a man named Robert Channel if he knew anything about the grave. Channel said he did know whose grave it was, that it was the grave of a young girl who had been murdered, and that he was there when her body was pulled from the water.
And yeah, that's what he told me. He remembered that. He was just a lad that they... And it was a very exciting thing in his lifetime.
Did he definitely name her as Naomi Wise?
Yes.
He did. Mm-hmm.
I was able to document that Randolph Wise lived in the house that was closest to the grave. Wingfield said that Randolph Wise raised the girl, and she was the one who was murdered and is in the grave on the hillside there above Chi River.
And he said he thought the reason that they didn't bury her there because she was going to have this child out of wedlock, see, and they didn't want to put her down there in Parson Cemetery. Mm-hmm. So
could have been.
Those people told them to put her up around the back.
Things like this back then just simply was not talked about. It was a total disgrace. No other word for it. Disgrace.
I got into courthouse research and found out about a woman who named Ruhami, which could easily be shortened to Ami or Omi, and there's about 10 or 12 different similar names used for Naomi. She did exist. She died of unknown causes, according to courthouse records, and that there was a nefarious gentleman in the neighborhood who was in hot water with other neighborhood women and had been charged with, I think, 3 or 4 bastardy cases.
A lot of those people came down here to work in the hardwood, you know. And apparently he was a pretty smooth character. Everywhere he would go, she was with him. And, of course, she was quite young. And so anyway, he got in trouble. And so she finally told him that if he didn't marry her, she was going to blow the whistle on him.
John Lewis, will you tell me your mind? Do you intend to marry me or leave me behind? Little old me, I'll tell you my mind. My mind is to drown you and leave you behind. Have mercy on my baby and spare me my life. I'll go home as a beggar and never be your wife.
Kissed her and hugged her and turned her around, then pushed her in deep waters where he knew that she would drown. He got on his pony.
The country music recording industry plays into this when you get up into the 20th century. And then people like Doc Watson and people who were quite famous, Roscoe Holcomb, I think, recorded it. And along the way, they changed it from Deep River to Chi River and added their own context to it and their own geography to it. And all of a sudden, it becomes something different than what it started out to be.
These artists probably learned the song from early commercial recordings, which mostly adhered to these later verses.
Threw their net around her and drew her to the bank. Her clothes all wet and muddy, they laid her on a plank.
And that's what's called the folk process. A song is passed down, then written down, then committed to acetate. When it enters popular culture, it's usually very far from where it began.
Made no confession, but they carried him to jail. No friends nor relations would go on his bail.
This story was produced by Jesse Wright Mendoza for a live storytelling performance this past summer, supported by Traveling 219. Music was by Emily Prentice of Elkins and Doc Watson singing Naomi Wise. Traveling 219 is a series by Allegheny Mountain Radio with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the West Virginia Humanities Council, and AmeriCorps Vista. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Beneduccio. Our director is Chuck Anzalevich. I'm Beth Voorhees.